Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, one of the most enduring groups of the rock era, Gladys Knight and the Pips, were responsible for so many hits that remain popular today. And they were also part of the Motown story as well. But how did the group begin their rise to the top? And what was the impact of William Franklin Guest, who was an original member of the group? Well, my guest today is William's sister-in-law, Lady Diana Ziegler. She's author of Midnight Train from Georgia, which chronicles the incredible rise of Gladys Knight and the Pips from their origins, singing in a small Atlanta church to their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. For everything about the book, go to midnighttrainfromgeorgia.info, midnighttrainfromgeorgia.info. And Lady Diana, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Ara, for having me on as your guest. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, I want to put you in context of the group because you're writing it from the book from a certain perspective, which is somebody who called you, is it Babro or Bebro?
Babro. And he called me Little Dada.
Okay. And that's because he married your sister. We're talking about William Franklin Guest. So the story really is, in a very personal context, your brother, and the larger context, obviously, is Gladys Knight and the Pips and Motown and that whole world of rock and roll, which you've been part of for so many decades. So why did you decide to write the book?
Well, just as you said, I lived the story. And my brother-in-law was more than my in-law. He actually is my brother. He and my sister got married 3 weeks before my brother passed. So he stepped in as brother and his son. But even prior to them getting married, the Ziegler, the Guest, and the Knight family were just one family. If I can go back, Babro would say that he was singing and dancing in the womb because he grew up in a family where his grandmother was a singer, his mother was a singer, his uncle played guitar, and they would have jams, little jam sessions on the back porch in rural Georgia that all the neighbors would come to hear the family play music. And then his grandmother, as a kid, taught him to sing harmony in the kitchen while she was cooking. But what people don't know about Gladys Knight and the Pips, and I'll start with the Pips, because the Pips were originally Gladys Knight, her brother Merrill Bubba Knight, her sister Brenda Knight, my brother-in-law William Franklin Guest, and his sister Eleanor Guest. Those were the original Pips. So that is the group that started in the gospel choir. But basically, they were singing in the youth choir, and the parents sang in the adult choir at Mount Moriah Baptist Church in Atlanta. But ironically, because of Bubba's 10th year birthday party, they had a birthday party and Garfield had a record player, one of the friends that they had come over. Those little kids wouldn't know anything about those record players now. Everything is streamed, but a little hand thing that you carry. And that's what they were playing the 45 records on and dancing. So when Garfield had to leave and take his record player home, they didn't have any music. So those five started singing and the parents were there and they said, wow, they sound good together. So that's how the group sort of kicked off from the gospel choir, youth choir, into singing as a group around Atlanta, Georgia area at various functions until they became so popular, you know, going into junior in high school that they started getting invitations to perform. So that was the first group, the Pips. you know, until they actually went to New York. And that's a whole other story because their first hit, you may recall, Every Beat of My Heart, was first recorded in Atlanta, but under the guise of, let's just come over and try this equipment. So they went over as kids to try this equipment. And of course, the person put the record out.
Right.
So my brother-in-law is walking down the street and he hears the record playing, you know, in this record shop. And so he says, wow, that's a record. He calls Bubba, and then Bubba says, yes, I know, I just heard it. So that's how it started, of them starting off getting ripped off, which is the way some of the business happened during that time. It wasn't until Bobby Robinson, who was a New York producer, heard that song and was excited and called this DJ named Mr. Patton and said, where is this group? He wanted to get in touch. Okay, they got in touch. And that's why the book is called Midnight Train from Georgia, because they left Georgia and came to my hometown of New York City with Bobby Robinson. Now, Bobby wanted to record that record over again. So he did. And that's how the group became Gladys Knight and the Pips, because they had to distinguish between one recording and the other, because they all were lead singers.
Sure.
So they recorded that one as Every Beat of My Heart that, you know, started spiraling up. And then, you know, they went to the Apollo Theater and all of that stuff. My mother basically knew Bobby Robinson and happened to take my sister and brother to a recording. And that's how they met when she was really about 15 years old. They got married when she was 19, but they didn't, you know, they were just talking and stuff throughout all of those years as the group were then evolving into Gladys Knight and the Pips and playing at the Apollo and going on the road. Now then, Gladys, who was married to the saxophone player at the time, became pregnant and decided that she wanted to go home. Brenda and Eleanor Guest and Brenda Knight, they decided they wanted to get married and, you know, have children. So there came Langston, who was a friend, and cousin Edward. So then they were just the Pips up there in New York, recording songs, Darling and Linda, which my brother-in-law wrote. Then they come across Marguerite Mays, who finds out. My brother-in-law was actually dating little Marguerite, who was her niece. Marguerite Mays was the former wife of Willie Mays, the great baseball player. She became their manager and told the guys to come over, you know, and they talked about that. And then she says, yeah, you all are doing great as the Pips, but you all would do much better if you had Gladys back with you. So basically, Marguerite Mays was the one who called Gladys and asked her to come back to the group. Langston left. And then the group, as we all know, as Gladys Knight and the Pips, Gladys, Bubba, William, and Edward, evolved. She took them, and this is a very important part of the story, too. She took them to Charlie Atkins. Charlie Atkins was the partner to Honey Coles. They were tap dancers in the 40s. And Honey Cole was also involved with the Apollo and stuff, but they were tap dancers. So Charlie Atkins, she asked him to be basically what I call to make them a polished act group. He started with a can and a pencil, just tapping beats. That's how they were learning those pip steps. That's how he started training them, just by rhythm and beats. And that's how the Pips got those precise rhythmic dancing moves that they were known for. And, you know, you mentioned Motown, because from there, Berry Gordy discovered this group that was up and coming and making hit records and this polished act. And then she sort of lured them to Motown, and their manager at that time became, which was had been their accountant and became their manager, Sid Seidenberg. That's how they got to Motown Records. And this the story is that Gladys really didn't want to go to Motown. But the way the group, remember, they were family.
Sure.
And everything was based on faith. They made all decisions as a group. She got outvoted because she was concerned. I'll just back up. She was concerned that if the group would get the full attention, you had Diana Ross and the Supremes, the Marvelettes, you had all of these wonderful groups. So she didn't know if they were going to be the standout group that they became in that pool of talent. So that's how they got to Motown Records.
Interesting. So there was that little doubt by Gladys in the sense of, and you always get doubt when you're making a big decision. But as you say, she got outvoted, which I didn't realize the whole group voted as a whole. Are you surprised looking back, not even looking back to today, because I referenced it in the opening. Are you surprised the impact of the music because it's still around? And I'm sure you hear it all the time, even at home. So it always new, right?
Right. I was at the airport just a couple of weeks ago, and I heard Save the Overtime for Me. I mean, and that is not a song that a lot of people are familiar with, but I'm hearing that just pumping. You know, I was 11 years old when they met, so I grew up with the story, seeing them from level to level to level. Mm-hmm. So I was already in love with the music, already knew that they had a powerful sound. And again, the Pips background and their dancing, it's like someone said to me, wow, you know, their background was like a melody. And that's true, because mm-hmm. everyone could sing the melody with them. My brother-in-law was the one who put the hoo-hoo into the Midnight Train song. Right. You know, he said he told Bubba, and Bubba told that story at the funeral because I didn't know it, that he said, Bubba, if we put that in there, people will remember that for a lifetime. And they did. So it was just, you know, some of those little things. When they hit with, you know, I heard it through the grapevine, even though, you know, Marvin Gaye had it one time, he came back with it, but their sound really sort of hit hard. And then at that time, they were just doing hit after hit after hit. And there were a lot of hits coming out of Motown, but there were certain groups that stood out, the Temps, right, the Four Tops, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Marvin Gaye, Diana Ross, the Supremes, et cetera. So I'm not surprised that their music stood out because they were that good.
Well, we always talk about Motown, the Motown sound, but as you just said, there were groups that excelled beyond the Motown sound, meaning they were individualized within that umbrella. Let me put it that way, that you had Gladys Knight and the Pips, and you had the Temptations, and you had other groups that you had the overall umbrella of Motown sound or the Motown sound, but you really had distinct groups within it.
Right. And something that I should also add is Charlie Atkins, mm-hmm. who made them a polished act. Berry Gordy came after him. He wanted him to teach the other groups the steps. He said, yes, he would come to Motown. But when Gladys Knight and the Pips said they would come to Motown, he said, but he will still be working exclusively with Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Sure.
Even though he taught that. So that polishing up on the act and the dancing, because Charlie Atkins used to say that William Mabrow did those steps specifically, mm-hmm. that he did them exactly on the beat. And in his opinion, he was the best, you know, dancer, you know, given whoever Whoever, they all dance well. Edward had bad feet, so whenever he landed on those steps very, very lightly. But you know, that was the joy. So that sound, but that was one of the reasons that after they became such a hit, how Buddha Records was able to kind of shy them and get them away from Motown. Well, coupled with the fact too, the Berry Gordy, when it came to their renewal of the contract, he did not want to pay them the money that they wanted. But by that time, they were, you know, a hit group.
Sure.
Buddha promised them not only the money they wanted, but they could really concentrate on them solely. So that's when you got the Midnight Train to Georgia. You know, and those hit the Imagine album that John Weatherby, you know, helped produce. And that's when the American Music Awards, they started winning the Grammys, et cetera. You know, and after that, you know, the rest is history. They were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996.
Did William and the rest of the group, did they realize at the time they were producing recording and releasing and producing these records, that they would have such staying power?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, the group was together for 37 years, so they had longevity as it was. And I think that coupled with the Motown sound that has survived for decades and their hits on Buddha Records, I mean, they knew that they were, you know, a hit sustaining group. But if, you know, I'm sure looking at, I mean, he's been dead for 10 years now. Of course, the Midnight Train to Georgia, all of that, you know, those songs were still playing. But as I said to hear Save the Overtime for Me, and I had not even heard that for a long time, you know, I'm not surprised that they have sustained for so many decades. And I think that he knew the impact of the group. I mean, until his death, he was still writing and trying to record music. At one time, he wanted Bubba to record with him too, so they would be like a Sam and Dave, mm-hmm. you know. So they live that music, and I would say that he's just smiling in heaven to know that it's all going on still today.
It's an amazing story. What was your his relationship with the rest of the group? Your brother-in-law. What was William's relationship with the rest of the group?
They were family, you know, so as from little kids, they grew up together. They were close. I mean, until the end, people even don't know. I mean, I was there until his last breath. They loved each other because what kept this group together was family, faith, love, and harmony. And I say harmony is more than just a blending of voices. It was the harmony of spirit. They were united in a united front. Now, after 37 years, as in some groups, they start seeing wanting to do some other things. And at one time, just before they broke up, they were signed to three different record companies. Gladys was on Columbia. The Pips were on Casablanca by themselves, and Gladys Knight and the Pips were on Buddha, you know, until they came back. So they started to wanting to, you know, reach out and try some other things, which but they stayed together as a group for 37 years.
Yeah, that's it. First of all, it's a great long story, and it's family. So I think it's perfectly natural that they would want to branch out and do individual projects. Mm-hmm. It's just human nature.
Right, right.
In that sense. But they also realized what they had as a group, too. So you could theoretically do both, you know, experiment a little as an individual and come back to the group on occasion. So I could see how that could work.
Just to underscore how close they were, because to Bubba, he was like, Babe Ruth was like his big cousin. Okay. He, when Babe Ruth went into a coma just before New Year's Eve that night, because my niece and I, we were at the hospital till almost like midnight. Little did we know, Bubba was on a plane from Las Vegas, flying to Detroit to that hospital, got there sometime, like he called my sister, maybe 2 or 3 in the morning. We don't know what he said, but he went in there, talked, got back on a plane, and flew back to Vegas. That's how close the Pips were. It makes my eyes tear up. Just think about it. You know, I mean, it was based on pure love, which I think is what was the glue that kept them together. Even though, you know, they broke up eventually, I still remember, you know, so many of the fun times. When I would come to Vegas all the time, because Bubba still lives there, you know, we would get together and laugh. I mean, we're still all a close family, even till this day.
I was thinking a subtitle for your book would be Family is Everything.
Yes.
Based on what you're telling me. I mean, it's quite a remarkable feat, because if you think about it, it's family, but then at the same time, you're working together all the time. You're traveling, you're dealing with the stresses and strains of everything. And you're fighting within that industry to be successful, and also to not get taken advantage of. So you have all these elements going on, and to last as long as they did as a group, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and there were a lot of laughter. I mean, I laughed so much coming up, listening to the road stories. And that was a part of the entertainment business back then. You know, they were on the buses. They weren't on the airplanes. They were playing what was called a chitlin circuit.
In other words, no private jets, right?
Yeah. So having, you know, like the B.B. Kings and stuff mentor them, because they performed with B.B. a lot. And just the various groups looking out for them and, you know, mentoring them along the way. And then the laughter and the joking, them coming to New York for the first time, staying in the Hotel Teresa, which was a high-rise building to them, and holding on to each other as they look out the window because it was so high. You know, so many fun times and so many stories. Like, William was a great storyteller and brought a whole lot of laughter. I mean, so all of the things were not always true, but they were so funny, you know, and just some of the stories. And, you know, when we were ever allowed, because he never really wanted the family to be backstage too much and get exposed to all that stuff that was going on backstage. But whenever we were backstage, to just be in the dressing rooms, you know, listening to the laughter and the fun, that was the glue that kept things together.
Have you talked to people over the years about your brother? And is that one of the reasons you decided to write the book, to give us a little bit more insight into your brother's contributions to the group?
Well, I talked about him all of my life. But, you know, I'm a journalist and a broadcaster. So just the last few years, I decided, you know, I'm doing stories and stuff on people all the time. I just decided to start capturing some of those stories, some of those nights. And sometimes we'd be up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning talking, and just started recording on my little video camera, and just kept, even though I lived the story. And then it's so funny because he could tell things so many different ways. So my big challenge was to, like, let's get what version and put it together that I also know, you know, happened.
Right.
And, that's why the book has commentary from me in between his commentary as well.
Right. It sounds like he was a great raconteur, but not necessarily filled with all facts. Would that be correct?
I mean, the facts, there, the facts were there, but there was some embellishment. You know,
that's
such a funny guy. And I remember my mother used to say to him sometimes, "Well, why don't you just stop lying? I know all that." You know, but
when he did it, was he convincing when he did that, though, when he told the story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He had me convinced. I was really young then, that they picked up somebody when they were driving on the road that didn't have any arms and opened the car door and closed the car door. I mean, just, you know, things that I used to be fascinated. You know, I had to become grown to realize, okay, this is where I laugh. This is where I say, no, 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 no. But, you know, the stories in the book, as far as the road and stuff, because I've heard them from Bubba or Edward or Gladys or been there as a witness. Those are factual.
Right.
You know, how they were told.
That was the entertainment part.
That was entertainment.
Yeah.
But he would have been a comedian. Along with being this great singer and dancer and songwriter.
Well, before I let you go, what would you like people to take away from reading your book? Are there one or two things particularly about your brother or in general about the Pips?
Well, I would want them to take away the glue that holds things together, the family, the faith, and the love. And how, because it's so different from the groups now, they came up, they didn't go on social media. Everything was earned. The music back then was pure. Their music has lasted over time because they were that good that they could stay in the genre for all of these decades, even in the world of rock. I mean, they were pop. They were soul, they were rock. I mean, they crossed the genres and even, you know, did movie tracks. So they are just what I would call the apple pie group, you know, that brought entertainment to so much of us that we are still enjoying it.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Lady Deanna Ziegler. She's author of Midnight Train from Georgia. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about the book, you can go to midnighttrainfromgeorgia.info, midnighttrainfromgeorgia.info. And Lady Deanna, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Ira. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.